Welcome to Innovations in Leadership, a Success League radio production. This is a podcast focused on customer success and the leaders who are designing and implementing best practices in our field. This podcast is brought to you by the Success League, a consulting and training firm focused on developing customer success programs that drive revenue. My name is Kristen Hayer, and I'm the host of Innovations in Leadership and the founder and CEO of the Success League. And today I'm joined by the founder of Customify, Philip Wolf, and we're going to talk about how to make sure that customer success is an important value-adding part of the business rather than just a cost center. So Philip, I'm excited to talk about this. I think it's a very important topic and it's timely as the current economic uncertainty is causing companies to really evaluate their businesses and try to find places to trim costs. Welcome to the podcast today.
Yeah, thank you, Kristen, for having me. I'm excited to be here and give some practical advices to the audience.
So before we get into the topic, how did you end up in customer success?
Yeah, that's a great question, actually. I was before in a very different industry, one was more IT security focused. But during that journey, I also spoke to a lot of SaaS leaderships. And one thing that came to my attention was the mismatch between their attention, let's say, between typically customer acquisition and customer retention. They knew all the details about all the PPC programs they were running and what's exactly the cost of acquisition for each channel and so forth. How do they convert? And then, when you ask the question, okay, so the customer signs up as a customer, what do you do next? What's happening then? Yeah, we sent them some newsletters and, there was like very clear that there was a bigger mismatch in between those two things. Back then, I didn't even know that it was called customer success. To be honest, it was also like 10 years ago. So it was definitely quite a different landscape when it comes to customer success. We came quite far since then. Anyhow, that was kind of the initial trigger for me to research this topic of retention. And then, okay, what teams do that? What's the difference there from larger to rather mid-sized companies, et cetera? So that was how I started to research it. And the initial idea also then for Customify came pretty much from that research, also looking at what can mid-sized companies do? Gainsight was already there, but what does a mid-sized customer success team do? What tool do they implement? Gainsight is out of their budget and also from a functionality perspective, like they don't need 80% of those things. So what do they do? That market research basically led me then to start Customify.
So tell us a little bit more about Customify. What does the company do? And do you have customer success yet? And if so, how do you take care of your own customers?
Yeah, of course, we have customer success. We had that from day one. Of course, we have to also be a good example as a software for customer success teams. So yeah, our customer success team works basically with other customer success teams, establishing their strategy, giving them best practices, and as a main part, of course, helping them to set up Customify, which is basically their tool. So what we do as in very short is basically enabling the CSMs to do their job right, enable them to talk to the right customers at the right time with the right message, and basically the tool for them to enabling to do their job. We are around now since almost 7 years, mainly focusing on the growing SaaS, the emerging SaaS companies, somewhere between, I would say, 20 and 250 employees. That's kind of where most of our customers are at.
Okay. That makes sense. And I think that's really interesting because that has, I think, been a bit of an underserved market in the space.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So today, let's get into our topic. We're going to be talking about how to ensure that customer success is seen as adding value to the company. Why do you think that's important right now?
Well, I would say it's more than just value add. It's even like proving that CS is a growth channel. Like really, CS is a very important channel in your business, in your strategy. So many smart people predict the financially, let's say, more difficult times in the next 1-2 years, which we will see how that unfolds. But certainly something is coming, if not already there. What that always means is cost cuts. And cost cuts typically affect the least important cost centers first. So let's say this way. So I, as a founder of a company, if I have to cut costs, I, of course, look into what impact has what kind of cost cut, right? If you're in CS or even a leader of a CS team, it's more important than ever that you can demonstrate why CS is not a cost, but rather this growth channel to avoid those costs for you and for the team, or at least to keep them to a minimum.
Yeah, I think you just brought up an interesting point. It's important right now because of the economy, but stability is always a challenge, I think, even when it isn't an economic downturn. I mean, if you think about just even the last 3 years, there's been a pandemic, there's been wars, there's been economic instability all over the place in different areas for different reasons. So, you know, continually being able to prove that your organization is delivering value is always going to be important, because you never know what's going to come along besides just a recession. It could be something else. It could be another pandemic.
Yeah. And actually, for most other departments in the company, this is already something that they have to do also. Like when you think about the sales department, they are almost purely run by numbers. Of course, easier numbers as in a CS team, naturally. We can dig a little bit deeper in what numbers a CS team typically owns. But yeah, this is absolutely true. Yeah, it's not something just now in the current situation, but also before and after.
Yeah, it's all the time. Let's get to some practical advice, because I know you have a lot of this. What do you think a company should focus on during an economic downturn?
I mean, I can speak mostly for SaaS companies, as this is where we are a SaaS company. We work mostly with SaaS companies, not only, but mostly. In at least the more mature version of those SaaS companies, I would say 70, sometimes 90% of the revenue, or more sometimes, comes from retention and expansion. So it comes from existing customers. From an advice perspective, or what I think will happen, is that naturally means that many of those companies will focus on their existing customers more than ever to avoid these leaks in the bucket, so to avoid the churn, therefore this huge portion of the revenue. Of course, I would say the companies, including ourselves or anyone out there, would also have a close look at expenses. So expenses is something, of course, you will look closer on than in other times. I mean, we saw that, right, in the news. Some of the bigger tech companies released 20% or more of their stuff without even having a business impact as of that moment. It's just like precautionous. So we just like, let's do this in advance. And I cannot confirm that for our customer segment happening, at least as of today so far. This mid-market segment is not doing those kind of things, or is not yet affected. Actually, many of our customers are growing the team. I mean, we can clearly see that, because one of the things that our CS team is responsible for and reporting is also retention, but also expansion. And expansion in our case means people increase their teams, add more users to Castify. So we can clearly see that still happening as of today. And I just looked before this recording here, I just looked at the numbers, if there's anything that I can see that changes, and it didn't. So that also tells me that this downturn might not affect anyone in the same way.
It's interesting. You know, I think too, companies need to kind of think about how all of the teams support each other during a time like this. What do you think that the rest of the company needs to be doing to support customers' success? And I don't say customer success as a team, but their customers' success as customers. What does the rest of the organization need to do to support that?
Still, they would probably need to support the CS team, as giving them access to the tools so they can work. And in my experience, this is typically also looking at data, or getting the right teams access to the critical data. So data is really, really important for anyone in the company, but specifically for customer success team. Of course, my view as a vendor of a CS platform is also slightly biased, because if the CS team or the team taking care of customers doesn't have a proper tool to work in, then it's very hard for them to do a job. So if I spend time in spreadsheets and 5,000 other systems, then I'm not doing my job. It's like I would run a support system without having a proper ticketing system, and I cannot measure anything. I just respond to emails. Maybe some emails go lost or get overseen. So that's that. But overall, I would say what is important is that you are able to also show your customers what value do you provide to them. So this is also more important than ever. And this might be different from each and every company, and even structure and product or service that they provide. But it's very important that you enable teams to be able to show what value do you provide for your customers. 10% more sales, 30% cost savings, 50% more efficient process, whatever it is that you sell. But you, if you can prove this to your customers, then that's really important.
Yeah, I'll echo that. I think that that is the most important thing. I mean, that's why we have customer success in the first place, in my opinion. But it is different for every company. It's different for every customer.
Yeah, you would be surprised how many teams still struggle with that, because simply they cannot. They don't have access to this right data. So they really can't prove the customer the value they provide. It's sad.
Yeah, that, and also I think people forget that it's not the value you think you're providing to the customer, is the value that the customer thinks that you're providing to them. And so you can throw numbers at them all day long, but if the customer doesn't care about those particular numbers, it doesn't matter. How have you approached the challenge of demonstrating value in past roles? What examples do you have of that?
Yeah, I think I can help the audience a little bit thinking, how can I do that for myself? Now, specifically thinking about customer success. I mean, we can go a little bit through and see what does customer success do typically. Now, one of the things that we have in our sales calls, so when they don't have a tool yet, is I need to lower churn. Like, this is still like the number one kind of North Star metric or the thing that many CS teams have on their agenda. Now, how can you prove that you lower churn? Now, there's a lot of key values out there, like the MRR, the NRR, and all those kind of things. In the end, they mean all the same. Like, if your company has less churn, it will grow significantly faster over time. And that over time is a very important thing there, because if you compare like two companies and one has, let's say, double the churn than the other, no matter what that is, if you zoom out, then you will see this huge effect. If you zoom in and you just look at, like, I don't know, half year or something, the effects are actually minor, as in growth of the company. But if you zoom out, then the biggest effects become visible. Now, the question is, how can you as a CS team prove that you lower churn? We did things with customers where they did A/B testings. They had certain segments of customers which did not get the same or at all treatment of a customer success team. And then they compare this with the rest. So if you have the ability to do that, that would also clearly show that impact that you have. Not everybody has that, and like in quotes, luxury to be able to do it. But you also see it's just a smaller control group that you have. And maybe instead of hiring one more CS, you say, no, this group gets unassigned. So this group does not have a customer success manager assigned. Of course, needs to kind of be aligned with what you sell. But overall, that's the way to do it. Or you treat them differently, like more high touch, and the others really just to the bare minimum, and you compare the results. This is how you can do. You can also run customer interviews. I'm a huge fan of speaking to your customers, and not just for product development or for these things. We also do that a lot. Like, we do something called design sprints, where before you start actually developing something, you really speak to not all customers, but to a subset of customers that are interested in this particular functionality. And then you show them what you think is right. And then you let them tell you if that is actually what they think they need. So talking to your customers in interviews and getting that proof that CS makes a difference. Of course, NPS surveys or the classical surveys would also do the job there if you don't have the time to run them personally. We also see that many times in ratings, like ratings in other platforms, on the Trustpilot, on G2 Cloud, how they are all named. So you can also prove that if you have the proof as a CS leader, hey, look, those are the ratings, and they say they love the service. They not just love the product, they love the service. We recently had the case where a CSM was changing the job, and she actually told the new manager that she wants to work only with the Castify team. So she didn't particularly say the product, she said the team, right? So that's a clear indicator that you have a huge impact as a CS team on that part. The other one is, of course, expansion. We talked about it before. So that's also one of the second things on the agenda of every CS team. So expansion typically means they add more seats, or they buy more services, or they expand their integration or buy additional products, upgrade their plan. All those kind of things mean typically expansion. The question is, how can you prove it? Now, this is an easier one. The question is always, when does this upsell upgrade happen? If you can also prove, because typically, or at least what we have seen in many of our customers, this very often happens, for example, in a QBR or as a follow-up of a QBR or as a follow-up of the meeting where the CSM said, hey, look, I see you are using XYZ. Have you thought of using this particular module as well? No, we didn't even know it exists. Yeah, like, I can show you how this would help you as well. And you as a CSM, you know your customers pain a lot, you know how they use the product, you know those things. So it's not even selling so much as it is really just advising on things that are out there. If you can track when does this upgrade happen and what was your influence on that, that's something how you can prove the value. There's more, there's also like typically like customer success also creates customer advocates when they are really like pushing your product. And like this example, they change the company and they only want to get your product. They get presented with something else. They say, no, I use this product. I want to work with this product. That's a clear proof. The onboarding, if, and this is something not all of our CS teams we work with have the responsibility. In some companies, it's divided and there's a specific onboarding team that handles that, but there's a good portion of customers also where the CS team handles the onboarding, us included. For us, the dedicated CSM also does the onboarding typically. And in the onboarding, it's all about time to value. It's the faster feature adoption rate, these kind of things. And again, of course, if there is the chance to do A/B testing or if there's any other chance where you have maybe the ability to have low touch segment that you look at and you compare that feature adoption to the ones that you actually treat as a CS team, as in time to value, that would be other examples. So there are ways. It all goes back to data. I'm a technical founder, so of course data plays a big role, but I can certainly say that many leaderships also look at data. So if the more data that you have that can prove these things, the better.
Yeah, and just to ask kind of a side question, you know, I think a lot of CS leaders get hung up on the idea that, oh, I don't have enough data or my data is not very clean. I think that sometimes, and this has been true for me when I've been working for earlier stage companies, you have to work with the data that you have and make an educated guess and then continue to collect data so that you can continue to test over time. And I think that's okay to do. And I think it shouldn't, the lack of data or the lack of super clean data should not hold you back. I'd love to get your take on that.
Well, I'm so. The challenge with data is that if it's wrong, it can lead you to catastrophic wrong decisions, right? It can be also just like, okay, I spent time with a customer that I shouldn't have because the data told me so, then it's just a time loss. The data in a software company, and we talk about SaaS companies mostly, software companies, right? So the data is really, I'm a strong advocate in getting your data cleaned, in getting your data up to date, in investing in tech teams, getting the data, not just for CS teams, also for product teams, because many of the decisions you can do is no longer just a gut feeling. It's really like, okay, of course, you're right. Like if I start there and there's the data, I have to work with something. There is something there, I have to work with that. If there's nothing there, okay, what are my options? What options do I have here in this company to get this data? Who's responsible? Who do I need to talk to? Whose permission do I get? When can I get this on the roadmap? And then, yeah, I'm another fan of like starting smaller. For example, health scores, right? That's something each and every CSM wants to track as well. Also comes up in every sales conversations, health scores. Clear, because those health scores are a big indicator of who to talk to and why, and are they using, do they get value, and so forth. Now, you probably, if you think about a semi-complicated, normal SaaS product, there are probably 10, 12, 15 health scores you can think of as in value that this product provides. Certain features, certain functionalities, if they send out enough campaigns, if they get enough responses, whatever your product is doing. But if you think about the really, really key things, maybe you go to your website, anything above the fold, what you see, what is there directly there as a key message, what you transport, that's the key metric that you can start with. You can go and say, I just need these two metrics that already helped me a lot more than the rest 15 we can talk about next year, but I need these two or three key metrics, right? So it's also about data can be anything, but we can start small. We can start with small data points that we collect. So that would be my take on that one.
Yeah, and I think then you can kind of build that over time. And I mean, I think the other thing is if you're a leader in a smaller organization, sometimes you have to be scrappy. And as the leader, you might have to be the one that stays up till 1 a.m. one night, entering data into your system so that you can run a report that gives you good, you know. I have been there. I have had to do that many a time.
Yeah, and but look, if you have this report and you go to the leadership, like, look, this report, and they were like, wow, this is awesome. This is awesome stuff. And then you tell them, look, it took me 1 week to compile this data. Now, if we want to scale this, how about we spend one time 1 week from one technical guy who feeds this data into the spreadsheet, and it's just there all the time, automatically, in real time, right? So absolutely.
Yeah. So don't be afraid to start smaller, to get creative with how you do this. And it kind of leads me to my next question, which is, you know, you have to build relationships with other people in the company to be successful as, I think, a CS leader. And but the biggest one when we're talking about value to the company of the CS team is building a strong relationship with your finance team and with your investors. So how do you go about doing that?
The companies that I work with a lot, in most of those companies, I would say the doors are generally open. You just have to go in. So what I mean by that is, like, those teams typically are really open to share insights with you from a financial team, maybe not everything, but key numbers that you need. It also goes back, however. So if you think about the relationship, what does that mean? A relationship is typically two-way, right? So what is the data that I can provide? So KPIs, for example, that I can provide them. Can I ask them, hey guys, what do you need from me? What would really help you to make your reporting better? From an investor perspective, what are the key metrics that you would say from a customer success department are really, really crucial to you that you don't have today? So you could start with this. It's probably like should be a two-way street, like give and take. Like I need some information, but I can also provide you information to make your life easier, to make your reports better, to make it more accurate.
As a young leader, I used to be really nervous about talking to finance because it seemed like every time I went in there, I was being told to cut team members or being asked to reduce costs. And you kind of get nervous about going and talking to finance. But the minute I sort of took that attitude that you just described of it being a relationship and a two-way street of sharing information, the whole thing changed. And it changed the way that I was able to advocate for my team for the better. So I love what you said about that. What are the sort of expenses that you should try to avoid during an economic downturn or even just to keep the focus on the value that your team is bringing to the table versus the cost?
It is, of course, slightly difficult one because it really depends also a lot on your business. For example, I would say business travel is the first thing you can cut off and you can cut those expenses and you can say like, look, I mean, we had COVID. You could certainly do almost anything that you thought you couldn't. You could still do them remotely. So why do we have to have business travel there? However, your business model might work in a very different way than it does for most others. And it might work 10x better if you have personal meetings with prospects, with clients, etc. So that's not something that works for everyone. About what I can certainly say that the expenses that you should not try to cut, that the expenses you should not try to avoid is everything around the customers. So you should really invest in that part or at least not cut anything from that. That includes, of course, CS, but also support, best service. If you have an onboarding team, if you have an advocacy team, all those teams, because the customers, as I mentioned before, they are the capital also specifically in such a downturn. They are really your capital. Also will make a difference how you start off once this is over. Are you in the pole position or are you rather in the middle field somewhere? That's why I would say this is definitely a cost you should not cut. Other than that, unnecessary things, right? So if business travel isn't really required, okay, maybe we go to that conference the next year. If the personal meeting with the customer isn't really required and we can do it also remotely, yeah, maybe we try it because that's all like adds up in the end.
It's easy during an economic boom time to kind of let expenses fluff up a little bit. And I think part of the job of a good leader is to kind of constantly, even in the good times, be looking at, okay, we have four different calendaring tools here. Let's pick one and get this down to like one smaller cost. I think I see tools that tend to kind of bubble up into more than people need. I see people kind of backing off on managing their teams with data and goals. And then the teams kind of can maybe balloon a little bit bigger than they need to be as well. And so I think to me, I think leaders should be looking at that, not just during economic downturn, but like all the time, so that when they hit an economic downturn, there's not as much pressure from the leadership team to trim because they know it's already an efficient team.
Absolutely. And I'm also a strong believer that any crisis is also an opportunity, always. So it's important to stay positive. And some of those things that you might do or that you might consolidate during that time frame might be actually things you might have postponed for a very long time, but they're actually quite healthy business decisions that at some point anyway should have been taken. Any crisis also holds an opportunity. I'm a strong believer in that one.
Yeah.
Having gone through many crises myself, right? It's kind of more of a life philosophy where you really try to see it. And sometimes I admit it's very difficult to see the positive thing, but very often from my experience, it's not directly shown to you in that very moment. So it becomes very often only clearer after sometimes very long time, sometimes some time has to pass until you look back and say, well, actually, it was good for something. Like I could improve this and that for based on this crisis that I went through. And I see that the same also for companies, organizations, roles in general.
It forces you to be creative, I think. And creativity is always good. Well, so if a newer leader is listening to this episode and they're thinking about how they want to make sure their team is seen as adding value to the company, what would be your biggest piece of advice to them?
A lot of what we discussed earlier, so collecting the data, start collecting the data on day one if you can, or at least think about how can I get this data for, not just for like those, like say product usage and all the data, but also data, my KPIs. So if you are a new leader, one of the things that probably came up or should come up in your job interview are, okay, what am I measured against? Like, what are my KPIs? What do you want me to do? How do I know I'm successful or not? So prove these things with data and collect the evidence. This helps you later to clearly show the impact of your work. But yeah, never forget also, if you are a leader, your team is there. So be a human there, be kind, be good with the team. And this is depends a lot. I was hired in some positions where you take over a team and you don't build a team. And that's very different. It's a very different challenge, let's say, from hiring a team from scratch, where pretty much everything is around picking the right people. In this other one, in the other example, it's more like, okay, we need to first see what are the seats available here in this bus, and then we need to see what passengers do we have and who fits in what kind of seats and who might not fit in the bus. That's also, of course, a decision as a leader that you might have to take at some point in time.
Yeah. This is a chance to off-road a little bit. What do you see as the biggest trend in customer success right now and why?
What I clearly see is that many companies switch and have the CS role also carrying a quota. So basically having direct responsibility for revenue. And I very, very much believe that it's also about time that this happens. Now, CS has come far in the last 10 years, and this seat at the management table is really something that is, I would say, well-deserved. And this is something that we, in the CS teams that we work with, that we see happening more and more. And it's not always there. It also depends a little bit on the size of the company and the stage they are in and so forth. But having a clear number also and a clear responsibility. And it's not like, I figured out an upsell opportunity. Let me call the sales rep so he can take that over because God forbid I should sell something, right? But we talked about earlier that very often those upsells or these cross sells or things, it's a recommendation more than it is a sales. You help your customers. You show them what other things are there. It's much different from some cold call that you have to do. This is a very different story. So that is something that we saw clearly happening in the last couple of, I would say, last year even, or more, where more and more of those revenue responsibilities are getting assigned to customer success teams. Has some challenges. You have to be very careful. It's still not a sales department, so it's probably worth a podcast on its own to talk about this particular part. But I can just see this is a trend that I can clearly see happening, and I think it's for the good. I'm very much in favor of this trend.
I agree with you because it does make it much more clear how the customer success team is contributing value to the company. You do, though, have to be really careful in terms of, and you're right, this is a totally separate. And probably my favorite podcast ever would be to talk about compensation for a whole podcast because okay. That's the topic that I love to nerd out on. But your comp plans have to be precisely designed to drive the behavior you want and not to drive behavior that would be bad for your customers. So if you can figure that part out, that solves that problem that might occur where, you know, people get worried that, oh, well, if I have my CSM selling, then they're going to stop doing all the other stuff that, you know, is good for the customers. And that can happen. But I think there's really simple ways to prevent that from happening. And a lot of it has to do with how you compensate.
Yeah, I would say there are more opportunities than the challenges there for sure.
I absolutely agree with you. Well, Philip, thank you so much for joining me today and for sharing your experiences with establishing customer success as a value-producing function. You had some great examples. If somebody wanted to reach out to you directly, what's the best way for them to get in touch?
Yeah, hit me up on LinkedIn. Philip Wolf, founder of Customify, should be the first or at least one of the first hits there. Get in touch is the best way to find me.
Well, Philip, thanks again. I also want to thank our producer, Russell Bourne, and our audio expert, Nika Rivers. This podcast is a production of Success League Radio. To learn more about the Success League's consulting and training offerings, please visit our website, thesuccessleague.io. For more great customer success content, follow the Success League on LinkedIn or at TSL Customers on Twitter. You can subscribe to Success League Radio on Apple or Google or Amazon or anywhere else you get your podcasts. And thanks so much for listening. We hope you'll join us next time.